Hard to tell if you were done there, man. Fantastic. Thank you for serving us this morning, worship team. All right, the last few Sundays we've been in the book of Joshua. And if you were here last Sunday, we walked through chapter 3, and that was already kind of referenced earlier in the service. And chapter 3 tells the story of the people of God crossing the Jordan River, where God is doing something really, really significant in their history and in their story. It recounted that incredible crossing. And the reason it's incredible, the reason it's so significant for their story, is that God was finally making good on his promise. That is, God had promised years before to the previous generation that he was going to take them into the promised land, but we ended up on a 40-year delay, a 40-year wandering. Well, finally, the soles of the feet of the Israelites are going to get to step into the land of promise, the land of Canaan. And God was doing it in a miraculous way. And we talked about that last Sunday. God was doing it in an incredible way because he was showing them that just like I did this 40 years ago for your forefathers, so you need to know, everything's still on course. And also, as you go into a nation that is going to be challenging for you, as you're going to face giants in the land and all those kind of things, you need to know that I'm in this and I'm with you. And what better way to do it than to do a pretty miraculous thing like he did? This is the nation the Messiah would ultimately come from. So the exodus from Egypt and the entry into Canaan were both characterized by these two crossings of bodies of water. And so it's kind of like a story within a story, bookended by these two amazing moments. God was indeed at work. And so this morning what we're going to do is we're going to read chapter 4, which continues the story on, and then I'm just going to reflect on it for a little while as we move then into communion this morning. So if you have your Bible, you're going to want to open up to chapter 4. And if you don't have a Bible, it's going to come up on the screen for you. There's a perfect example of the number in the bottom of the screen there for parents, just in case you're wondering what that was. That's a perfect example. Did you plan that? Okay. So if that's your number, you should probably go. Let's read Joshua 4 together. When the entire nation had finished crossing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Select 12 men from the people, one from each tribe, and command them, take 12 stones from here out of the middle of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood, carry them over with you and lay them down at the place that we camp tonight." Then Joshua summoned the 12 men from the Israelites whom he had appointed, one from each tribe. Joshua said to them, "Pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan, and each of you take up a stone on his shoulder, one for each of the tribes of the Israelites, so this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, 'What do those stones mean?' then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off in front of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. And when it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the Israelites a memorial forever." The Israelites did as Joshua commanded. They took up 12 stones out of the middle of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, as the Lord told Joshua, carried them over with them to the place where they camped, and laid them down there. Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests bearing the ark had stood, and they're there to this day. The priest who bore the ark remained standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. The people crossed over in haste. As soon as all the people had finished crossing over, the ark of the Lord and the priests crossed over in front of the people. The Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed before the Israelites as Moses had ordered them. About 40,000 armed for war crossed over before the Lord to the plains of Jericho for battle. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. The Lord said to Joshua, "Command the priests now who bear the Ark of the Covenant to come up out of the Jordan." Joshua therefore commanded the priests, "Come up out of the Jordan." When the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came up from the middle of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet touched dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped in Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. Those 12 stones which they had taken out of the Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal, saying to the Israelites, when your children ask their parents in times to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall let your children know, Israel crossed over the Jordan here on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until they crossed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we crossed over. So all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, and so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. Amen. God's word to us this morning. Quite a long passage. What I'd like to do this morning, though, is just pull out a couple of key things that I think are pertinent to the passage and also really connect with what we've been kind of experiencing together here this morning as we worship together. The key part of that passage is the challenge to remember. And isn't it hard to remember sometimes? How often do we forget stuff so easily, stuff that even just happened yesterday, if we don't write it down or whatever it is? It is so hard, especially as we get older, it is hard to remember things. The key to this whole passage, the key part is God telling the people to remember. You need to remember what I've done. So immediately after the people cross on dry ground, God tells Joshua, send 12 of them back now. You've just got over here. Now send 12 of them back into the middle and get them to dig up 12 stones from the riverbed there and bring them back over. And one is going to represent each of the 12 tribes of Israel. Bring them up and then take them to the place you're going to camp tonight and set them up as a memorial, as a sign. It'll play a role in the teaching and informing the next generation. When kids ask, what do those stones mean? You'll be able to tell them, this is what they mean. This is what God did. This is what they point to and represent to memorialize. They need to become part of the nation's story and memory. The rest of the chapter then kind of fills in some more detail. It kind of recounts the story sort of over again, and it, you know, reminds them of how they crossed over in haste and all of that. And then we're told, once the 12 stones have been lifted out, God tells the priest at that point to come up out of the Jordan. Right? Because so far, while all of this has been happening, the priests are rooted in the middle of the Jordan River. They're standing there, and they're holding the Ark of the Covenant, representing the presence of God. And the people have crossed over in front of them, but they're still standing there. And then the 12 men are sent back into the middle of the river, and they're still standing there, and they dig up these 12 stones, and they carry them across, ready to go and put them down as a memorial at Gilgal, and they're still standing there, and then Joshua says, okay, it's time to come up. So he commands them to come up, and as soon as they get off the riverbed, and as soon as their feet touch the bank on the other side, the waters rush back to place, and the flooding of the banks happens again. I don't know about you, but I imagine Israel now standing there and they're looking back at this kind of rushing river, and it was flood season, remember, it's kind of overflowing its banks, and they're watching this raging torrent go past them, and they're on foreign soil now. There's no going back. Like, they're committed. They're going to need to face the giants in the land that they're going to face. It's time to be bold, Joshua. It's time to be courageous. That's why I told you that. And it's the key reason why I needed to perform a miracle, because you need to know that I'm with you, because this isn't going to be easy. And later on in the chapter, we're told of the location where they camp, which is Gilgal. And Gilgal is kind of interesting, and Gilgal becomes kind of important, and this is the first time it's sort of flagged where they're setting up this memorial. It's the first place they camp, but it actually becomes quite important for Israel, because later on in their later history, it's going to be the place where Samuel the prophet, in front of all Israel, actually confirms that Saul is going to be the king of Israel, and it happens there, that kind of ceremony right there at Gilgal. Later on in Saul's reign, it's going to become a place of sacrifice to God a couple of times. Later on, Elijah and Elisha are going to have a base out of Gilgal. And also Hosea and Amos, both prophets, they're both going to mention Gilgal as a place of pilgrimage and sacrifice. So we learn about this place. It becomes a place of religious significance. It becomes important to the story. It becomes important to Israel as a nation. So you can imagine the scenario of Joshua playing out. People of God for years come to Gilgal on kind of pilgrimage. We want to go see those stones. We want to go offer sacrifice. And they go there, and you can imagine their kids saying, Mom and Dad, what do the stones mean? And the word Gilgal actually means circle, so it could have been that could have come from that moment. They may have put the stones in a circle. Why the stones in a circle, Mom? Why the stones in a circle, Dad? What does that mean? And the parents have a teaching opportunity with their kids. Well, this is what it means, because this is what God did. And this is part of our history and part of our story. The amazing day that the Lord enabled the people to cross the Jordan on dry ground, being told to wide-eyed kids around the campfire for generations. There's other times in the Old Testament where they're told to do things like that. They're told when the tabernacle and later the temple in Jerusalem, the Israelites are supposed to, three times a year, make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem during Pentecost, during tabernacles, and during Passover. Three times that tell key stories of what God has done in the history of the nation, and they're to go and offer sacrifice there and to be part of those festivals. So the same here at Gilgal, it becomes a place of significance, a moment on the calendar, like with those festivals. Well, modern nations have national holidays as well, don't they? This country has national holidays, and we get a day off. And part of it is to remember the identity of the people of Canada and who they are and where they've come from. Often there are days that remember how a nation became a nation, like on July 1st or for Americans on July 4th or whatever it is. So often we have those things. We have monuments of national significance in our capital cities or in other places as well that maybe remind us of the sacrifice that our forefathers have paid for our freedoms and things like that. So we too have memorials and days of significance and festivals and those kinds of things that remind us of our national identity, our history, who we are. And sociologists tell us that if any nation is going to successfully endure, it needs to become a nation of memory and hope. We need to remember who we are and what's happened before us, and we need to have hope going forward. But it isn't only nations that need to set up stones, as it were, is it? It's people as well, right? Families do this. Families tell and retell stories of their own history. Grandparents are great at that. And if you're in the room today and you're a grandparent, let me challenge you and let me encourage you. Become a steward of your family history. Become someone who passes the story on, particularly to your grandchildren. It's important. Become stewards of the family. Tell them how you met one another. Tell them about the struggles that you had to overcome, maybe when you were younger. Maybe for some of you, it's how you even moved to this country, which is an important part of your history. The key moments of your family line. Tell those stories around the campfire. Remind your kids. These stories will endure in your family if you tell them. And they'll help the kids and grandkids with a sense of rootedness and history, because we all need to know where we came from. And some of you might say, yeah, but you know what? My story isn't that happy. My story is full of pain. And I hear you, but I still encourage you to tell it, because it still helps kids and grandkids understand where they've come from. It still helps them perhaps understand how can I avoid following in the same way as maybe some of my own family members have. How can I avoid some of those things? Or maybe simply to be thankful that they're in a better place. It's important for us to have rootedness. Have you told your grandkids about your own conversion? Have you told your kids about your own conversion? Do they know the story? Do they know how you came to Jesus? Or the other things God has done in your life? And maybe you say, well, my grandkids are older now. They're not following Jesus. Like, they don't want to listen to me about that kind of stuff. Fair enough. It's easier to tell younger kids stuff like that. But you know what, friends? No one can argue with your story. Your story is your story. And you ought to tell it. Some families actually write their history in books. Maybe you've done that. Other families, I know a number of families who actually literally have stones or rocks in a bag. You know, do you know any families like that? It's a great idea, I think. And they have all these stones in a bag that from key moments, they add one every time God does something significant in their family line. And they take a Sharpie and they write on it. And it's like a memorial. And they write things like, God saved Uncle Fred, or God provided Dad with a job when things were tough, or God healed my sister, or whatever it is. Those key moments, and they bring them out at certain times, and they remember. And it leads them into times of family prayer and thanksgiving. It's memory. It's important. Many people journal as well. This morning, we witnessed baptism. Baptism Sundays are my favorite Sundays. I love hearing stories of people that have undergone life transformation. And baptism is all about laying down memorial stones, isn't it? Baptism is all about telling the story. It recounts for us, as Tim mentioned, excuse me, it recounts for us life before Christ. And it kind of pictures that going, as you go under the water, it's like death to the old self, death to the old life. And then testimony often tells a story of conversion and what it's like to be and what Jesus has done in my life, represented by coming back up out of the water, alive as a new creation in Jesus. Baptism is a key, key moment in people's lives. It is about memory and it's about hope. It's flag in the ground, it's memorial, it's memory. You can always point to the day of your baptism. Quite often those testimonies speak to people as well. It becomes key for them in their life. So if you've never been baptized, as Tim kind of challenged you, if you've never been baptized as part of your own spiritual journey, we'd encourage you to do that. We believe that Jesus commanded it. We believe that it's an important step. And we sincerely do not believe, and this is the trap many people fall into, we sincerely do not believe that you need to become clean and right and good and then I'll be ready to be baptized. Newsflash, you will never be baptized if you're waiting for that. Right? You will never be baptized if you're waiting for that. Believe and be baptized. And so if you want to start a conversation, a journey with us, we'd love to have that conversation with you. We actually hold baptism classes a number of times a year. We look out for them. We'd love to engage with you in a conversation about that. In some ways, not in the same way, but in some ways, membership is a little bit like that too. It doesn't have the same spiritual significance as baptism. But it is also about stake in the ground, flag in the ground kind of thing as well, and we've seen that today. And then where we're headed in just a few short moments is to the communion table. And communion is a very key memorial moment. And communion is actually much more than that. I don't only want to call it a memorial because I think it's more than that, but we're not doing a theology of communion today. And though it isn't only a symbol and only a memorial, it is a symbol and it is a memorial. And so, you know, when we go to the table today and as we take those elements, and those of us that know Jesus, as we partake in those elements, the kind of cool thing about communion is we get to engage some of the other senses. So we don't only use our ears to hear the story, and we don't only use our eyes to read the story, but we actually use taste and touch as well. And as we ingest the elements, we're actually engaging in another type of remembering, and it's helpful. And in taking the elements, we remember and remind one another of what Christ has done on the cross, and we thank him and we worship him. We declare to one another what he's done, his role in our salvation, and the only hope that we have. And as Matthew has already said today as well, it's also declaring war. worship, and worship isn't only singing, by the way, but worship, whether it's singing or whether it's going to the communion table or whatever it is, when you engage in worship, you're actually drawing a line in the sand. You're actually engaging and pushing back forces of evil. You're engaging in warfare. And it's why we said so often there's so many psalms in the Old Testament where the people, the singers and the musicians would actually go out ahead of the army because they understood that we don't just fight against flesh and blood, actually we fight against all the powers and the authorities in the unseen realm. So communion's warfare. And that's what we're going to go and do in just a few moments. So, in fact, if you're serving at one of our tables, if you wouldn't mind making your way there now, and I'll invite our team back up, please, to sing. As we go to the table today to take the elements, we remember what Christ has done, memory, and we look forward, hope, to the next table that we get to sit at, the marriage supper of the Lamb when we get there. And so this is a moment of memory. It is a moment of hope. This is a regular practice for the church of assembling the memorial stones.